Hello. This is Dr. Marjorie Barlow. I am a marriage and family counselor, and I do have some ideas for you. So take some time now to make yourself comfortable and think about yourself only for the next few minutes. This is your time. Give yourself a break and relax while you listen. Our topic today is success. I have my own formula for success. Maybe you already have one of your own, or maybe you could begin to think about what success is for you. You could make up your own formula just as I have done. I believe there are five factors in success. Factors are like the items in a grocery list or the ingredients in a recipe. They're the important things that go into some creation to make up the whole thing, whether it be the groceries we buy, the cake we bake, or the ingredients in a person's success in life. These five factors, these things, these ingredients that I have devised for my success formula are, number one, myself. Number two, my system of support. Number three, my goals and expectations. Four, the ways in which I manage my time. And number five, the way I manage my energy. I will define and explain these in a moment, but first let's talk about a definition of success. What exactly do I mean when I say success? Well, the dictionary definition of success is a favorable result, a wished-for ending, good fortune. My own version of success has been growing as I have studied and worked and learned. That includes lots of failure, too. I suppose one of the most important things I have learned about success and successful people is that these people who do succeed have a high rate of failure. I always remember about Babe Ruth being the home run king. He also, remember, was the strikeout king. That means he got up to bat a lot of times. Thomas Edison had hundreds of failures before he invented the electric light. Walt Disney went bankrupt, and on and on. You see, people who do nothing rarely fail. If you are to be successful, then risking failure is going to be part of it. So, do you know when and how you achieve success? How do you know when you are successful? What is success for you? Well, for me, whenever I accomplish whatever I set out to do, that for me is success. Doing what I've planned, achieving what I started, getting to the goal, reaching the goal, and achieving my goals, that constitutes success for me. Now, let's talk about my formula, this little design that I have for success in life. Remember now, you have the right and the power to design your own formula. This is just the one that I find working for me. First, the factor of the self, my own self-concept, my self-image, my self-confidence, my self-esteem, this thing called I, me, myself. It is made up of an inner picture or a concept based on all that I have collected from the past, either from the feedback of others or from the inner beliefs that I have constructed about myself, all coming together to form this thing called the self. Now, this means also a genetic inheritance of cells and blood and bones and certain chromosomes. That's the nature factor. Plus all that I was taught and all that was added into my little mind-brain system as I grew up concerning values, attitudes, and my own compliance or rebellion with that early teaching. That's the nurture factor. Myself was constructed from early childhood experiences, those that were good and warm and loving, caring, plus all those that were bad and cold, hateful, or neglectful. Unfortunately, the human condition almost guarantees that more negative than positive experiences are remembered from childhood. These were usually given in a very potent way. We always knew when they were displeased with us because of their attitude, their tone of voice, and their facial expression. Remember back when you were a child. Try to remember how they showed when they were pleased with you and how they showed when they were displeased. Do you find yourself remembering something warm and positive, or something of a negative nature? Since our parent figures were also human, they sometimes were tired and confused and lonely, and we might have been subjected to an angry look, a facial expression that seemed hateful. And remember, as children, we couldn't judge or discriminate whether we were terrible or whether they were tired. And probably, since we were very self-centered, we decided that we were the bad one and that it was all aimed at us. You see, children really are egocentric. What that means is that a child really believes that the world revolves right around the child. And that is, of course, as it should be. After all, the human infant is dependent and helpless. Survival is the real task. And since we began our existence that way, we were then dependent on the parent people who cared for us. We took in their words, their gestures, their facial expressions, their body movements, as if it were law and gospel. We assumed that they were always focused on us. Remember, this was not just our mothers or fathers, but anyone who might have acted as a parent figure. This could have been older brothers or sisters, teachers, even older friends or friends who were more aggressive or domineering. Anyone who assumed the role of authority or nurturance for us as we grew up in our childhood. Remember, too, it was not all bad. After all, someone took the time to teach us many things. We learned to talk, to walk, to feed ourselves, to govern our body functions, to be civilized. And by the way, we learn that by copying those around us. We imitate the people that we grow up watching. This means, of course, that you speak the language you speak because the parent figures around you spoke that language to you. I learned not too long ago that the two most effective ways to learn anything are to copy and to play. Playing seems to be the way we practice what we learn. So you copied those around you, their mannerisms, their speech, their dress, their eating, their body functions, and when you were allowed to play while you did it, the learning proceeded very, very smoothly and was taken in at a deep level. Out of all this came this self-image I'm talking about. One little sentence and one little exercise you can do to discover your own self-concept is the sentence beginning, "I am," and then you fill in the blank. So you might take time to write many sentences beginning with the words, "I am." And I wonder how you will describe yourself. Will you be describing yourself as only being certain roles, such as, "I am a man," "I am a woman," "I am a carpenter," "I am a teacher," "I'm a mother," "I'm a father"? Or will you use adjectives such as, "I am tall," "I'm fat," "I'm good," "I'm worthless"? Notice whether your self-description is positive, hopeful, optimistic, or is your self-description more negative, more pessimistic? Remember, the formula for success begins with the self and the feeling we have about ourself. To the extent that the self-image is positive, then success is guaranteed. Now think about the second factor in my formula for success. This is the one I call the system of support. Two things make up this system of support. First of all, the environment in which we live, and second, the relationships that surround us in that environment. Let's look at the second one right now. You can see quickly how relationships are crucial, I think, in success. Without a teacher to show us the way or a caring person to lend encouragement, without a wise person to expect higher things in a way that causes us to stretch and grow emotionally, intellectually, and physically, we would not achieve or accomplish very much. Loving relationships also give us a place to give, a place to serve, a place to love. My belief is that we have a basic human need to be able to love, maybe even more pronounced than our need for love. So relationships are essential. To the level that the relationships are negative, demeaning, shaming, and guilt-producing, then to that extent is our success diminished. Remember, this is my own personal formula, and my own personal experience is what is teaching me here, and it's that I have grown to my edges when I have been supported by a positive person who could show me the way to grow. someone who could provide the information I needed, someone who seemed to have an unshakable belief in my potential for growth. This would mean counselors, friends, teachers, loved ones who are instrumental and helpful in the growth process for me. Well, the environment also is an important factor in this system of support. We do need shelter from the cold. We need a place where we can have our physical survival needs met. In addition, each of us requires certain kinds of sensual stimulation in order to become more creative and to achieve more of our possibilities. For me, this means physical surroundings, the rooms that I find my body placed in, the houses where I live, the offices where I work, and any other workplace. For me, it needs to be attractive and clean and functional and pleasing to the senses. What I see, what I hear, taste, touch, smell, has a lot to do with how I perform and how I feel and how I act. So my suggestion is that you think now about your environment, where you live, the places where you find yourself daily. Think about the bed you sleep in, the house or the apartment you live in, your workplace, your means of transportation. And would your world go a little smoother, or maybe a lot smoother, if that environment was more to your liking? And could you do something about that as a way of ensuring your own success? Some of the nicest times of my life have been spent painting and fixing up rooms or houses. I become involved in that process, and I feel very good about myself when I'm doing that. The planning and the work and the enjoyment of accomplishment all make it worth the doing. I remember once when we built our own kitchen cabinets, and as I put the last tile on the countertop, I sat down over in the corner on the floor, and I just looked and enjoyed. I looked at the varnish on the wood and the beauty of our handiwork, just to enjoy what we had been doing. The pride in the ownership of that kitchen cabinet was a source of continuing feelings of success, and every time I went into that room, I had a new sense of my own worth and a feeling of accomplishment, and therefore a feeling of what I call success. Now we come to a very important part of my algebraic formula for the human possibility called success. To remind you of the formula, I do define success as self-concept multiplied by the system of support, which is a combination of relationships and environment. Then I add to that the factor called goals and expectations, with the whole thing divided by the way I manage my time and energy. So let's talk now about goals and expectations. Goals are like wishes that have become seeds of possibilities. We plant these seeds, we water them, and we grow them, and then they become real. They are like wants that get affirmed. So if you can picture a wish as a seed, it's easy to see that in order for the wish to become a goal, it must be planted and tended, fertilized, watered, given sunlight and air, and in general a lot of tender, loving care. So I make lists of wishes. And then those that are important to my life's success, I choose as goals. And as I would for a seed that I really wanted to grow, I nurture and I tend that goal until it becomes a full-grown reality, just as a beautiful plant grows. So, as an exercise now, a little bit of practice for your own future, why don't you make a list of wishes? Your list needs to be uncensored, unlimited, and a true reflection of your own wants, needs, feelings, your wishes. Go ahead and be preposterous in your wishes. Reach for things that you thought you couldn't have, ways you couldn't be. I'm always reminded that this building I'm sitting in right now was at one point in time a figment of someone's imagination. Before it could become a goal that was realized, someone wished for its existence. It was put on the wish list by someone. My experience with people is that they don't dream very big. So please be aware of your own limitations that you impose out of a self-concept that may say something like, Well, I couldn't have that because I am too, whatever you put there, too poor, too dumb, too ugly, too shy, too old, too young, not educated. All these limitations, you can be sure, we live up to. That's why I include expectations within the formula. Expectations seem to be more indicative of what we get than the goals we actually set. What I mean by that is, I tend to get what I expect rather than what I say I want. Now suppose that one of my wishes is to lose some weight. This seems to be an ongoing problem for us affluent Americans. And I really saw this formula lived out in weight control, both my own and those people who participated in a weight loss program that I ran. It seemed to me that the basic self-image of who we are, those who are wanting to lose weight, that basic self-image was multiplied by the relationships, and that we set goals, but we really got what we deep down expected instead. One person I will call Jim came into the program with the greatest of enthusiasm, and he made a remark in our Get Acquainted session that predicted what was to come. He said, "I think I've always been just a little bit overweight. I've lost tons of weight, but it's always the same 10 to 20 pounds. I put it on and I take it off." His basic self-picture was that of a man whose weight fluctuates. He is always returning to his overweight status. And until he changes his self-image to that of a man who maintains his weight or who is slightly underweight, then his goals will continue to correspond to his deep down self-expectations. You see, his habit pattern is not to maintain health, but always to be in the process of gaining or losing weight. That's his habit pattern. Therefore, he may set his goals, but probably he will actually live out these deep, unconscious expectations. So we must deal with that expectation of being overweight. And then he can have success. I want to talk now about something that's common to us all, something that we call time, a wonderful commodity. We say things about it like this. We'll say, "I don't have enough time. Time is running out. When I get time, I can't find the time." Saving time, spending time, creating time, wasting time, lead time. You know, time is the only commodity we cannot save. We cannot put time in the bank for use at a later date. We cannot draw interest on time. We cannot save time for someone else or invest our own time to be used later. And time is also the only equal commodity, equal to us all. I have the exact same clock time in one day that you have. My 168 hours in a week is the same as that of the people who live in China or Australia. But our subjective view of that 168 hours and what it means depends a lot on our culture, our family, and its view of time, and on us as individuals and what we have learned about time. Our own way of dealing with time in America is very interesting. 1 minute in primetime television is so valuable to the advertising industry that recently a football game is to be scheduled so that there will be 1 minute of blank screen, silent time, so that people can go to the bathroom. Had you been born to a primitive culture, you would have been more tuned to a natural sequence of time, the seasons and the growth pattern, the cycles. We in our culture mark time by hours, minutes, days, weeks, years, seconds, instead of moons and other natural cycles. Our lifetime is divided into traditional boxes, starting with early childhood time, then the time for education, and then a period of time for work, and finally a time for retirement. We have many studies now about the times of our lives, the midlife crisis time, the time of old age, or the time of two-year-old, terrible twos, that time. These are all ways that we have of viewing time. Part of my success formula depends on the way we manage this precious commodity called time. I remember working with a woman whose children were grown, and we were facing together that awful loneliness of the empty nest. When I asked her what goals she was interested in setting, she named several things, one of which was returning to school to complete her high school diploma, which she had interrupted. Well, we talked further, and I found out she had always very much wanted to have a college degree. So she learned about community education classes where she could qualify for a GED, a general education diploma. And since she was an adult, 45 years of age, she could enter college without passing the regular entrance tests. And 4 years later, she could obtain her bachelor's degree from college. She said to me, "I don't have enough time to do that. Why, I would be 50 years old when I finished that." My question to her was, how old would she be in 5 years if she didn't go to school? She saw the point that the time was hers to manage as she decided. This story has a wonderful ending. That woman now is a successful 53-year-old professional person. She has earned not only the high school diploma and the bachelor's degree, but an advanced degree as well. The simplest way to manage time for me has to do with how I view my jobs. If I see a job to do, and I think I don't have enough time, then I can change my point of view by seeing how much time I have and managing the time rather than the job. For my friend who went back to school, she was looking at that enormous job of earning a high school diploma, a college degree, instead of looking at the years of time she was blessed with. If my job is to fold clothes, as it was in my days as a young housewife with several little babies, and those were the days we washed diapers, then I could look at that mountain of laundry, feel depressed and procrastinate, and not do the job. Or I could practice daily time management. I discovered that if I set aside a period of time such as 8 to 8:30 every day to fold the laundry, I could keep up with the diaper folding by managing time rather than managing the task or the job. And it works today the same. If I have a dreaded job, such as filing papers, and they've been stacking up to an impossible size, I find I could put it off if I look at the size of the task. But if I look instead at my time, and I decide that I will declare every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. to be my time for filing papers, then it's amazing how I can get those papers filed in about 3 Fridays. The rule for me is I start filing papers at exactly 9 a.m. and I stop filing papers at 10 a.m. And the only time I think about filing papers then is from 9 to 10 on Fridays. Filing is all I do then, and that's the only time I worry about the stack of papers. For me, that is good time management. For my friends who come for counseling, time management is one of the best ways to get them back into a path of growth and out of the stuck place where they have been existing. This is a story that is typical of the people who enter counseling. Please understand, this is not revealing a real person. It's only an example taken from many people in many years of counseling. This man was referred by his doctor because he was showing signs of severe stress or distress. He felt very depressed. He had retired from an active 20-year career and was surprised to discover that he was not as happy as he had predicted he would be all those years while he went about the required jobs in his work-related duties. He really had a belief that when he retired and was his own boss, he would be delightfully happy and enjoy life to the fullest. To his shock and his wife's dismay, he not only was not happy, but was feeling down and listless. He wanted to watch TV all day, and he just couldn't seem to get going. Together, we worked out a plan, a schedule of time, and he had then something to look forward to every day. For depressed people, I think the schedule of their time becomes their salvation. Having something to do at a specified time of day or day of the week can become an anchor. Now we reach the last factor in the success formula, the one I call the management of energy. Energy is our active strength or force, our healthy power, our vigor, our capacity for work or play, our ability to produce action or effect. The way we manage energy is like the way we manage time, with the exception that we can maintain our bodies, minds, and spiritual selves in such a way that the wellspring of energy is present for us, whereas time is a concept based on past, present, future. Energy can be saved up. Time cannot. Energy for the physical body comes from the fuel we give it. Good nutrition, appropriate exercise for our age and stage in life, and rest that replenishes our energy can be managed by each individual. Energy for the mind is intricately connected to this physical energy. Clear thinking and the mood of our feelings can add to physical energy. In another lesson, I teach about the clock of awareness, where we trace the effects of our beliefs on our thoughts and the thoughts on our feelings, and that all work together to determine the behavior or what we do. In our daily existence, we need to practice a program aimed at health and well-being in all these areas: the physical body, the intellect or brain-mind system, the emotional self, and the spiritual being. And from this emphasis on maintenance of these vital areas can come a high amount of creative energy. One of the exercises I do for my own mind is easy for you to do. Right now, where you are, take 3 deep breaths. And imagine that the oxygen you are breathing in is going to your brain, oxygenating it, aerating your actual brain cells. Those who know about the brain tell us that the brain needs a large portion of the body's oxygen, maybe as much as 20 to 25% of the total intake of oxygen. So when you think of it, you can breathe deeply and thereby replenish your energy, the energy needed by your brain to keep that wonderful world of your thoughts operating. Quiet time to think, to meditate, to replenish, and to allow these creative juices to flow will bring fresh, new energy. You know, you do have peaks and valleys. Some people work best in the morning and some at night, so that has to be taken into account also. Think then, what kind of person would I be if I really liked myself? To learn self-parenting so that we can think and feel and do and believe, that's a well-thought-out pattern of possibility where we can construct daily in our life development. We can create then the system of support that allows us to recognize that in all relationships, we have power over our half of that relationship. We can influence but not control others. We also can remember that an attractive, pleasing environment will foster our own human growth, and that goals are like wishes planted as seeds and carefully tended, whether they be 1-minute goals or 50-year goals. The basic unconscious expectations will supersede the stated goals. We can remember that managing time is the key to managing the tasks, and that energy is created through and from the mind. You can change any of the 5 factors: the self, your support system, your goals, your time, and energy. And if the change is toward positive, then the chances of success in life will certainly improve. This is Dr. Marjorie Barlow, and I would be pleased to know you.